Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 137 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling the February from Hell and the March and April from Heck, about my conversation with Jeremy Wolf, meteorologist at the Spokane National Weather Service office. This is the fourth time I've talked with Wolf, but given that this podcast is more than 2.5 years old, not to mention the relevance of weather to dryland wheat farming, that hardly seems excessive. If you haven't listened to Wolf before, you will find interesting nuggets of information about Eastern Washington and world weather in the earlier episodes I recorded with him, which are available at the Washington Grain Commission website. Episode 96 is titled, Wolf's Guide to Wacky Northwest Weather. Episode 39 is titled, So You Wanna Talk Weather? And episode 25, which introduces Wolf to podcast listeners, is entitled The Other Weatherman, a name that plays on the fact that many in eastern Washington consider the long-range weather forecaster, Art Douglas, who presents at Spokane Farm Forum, to be the weatherman. Podcast apps only keep the most recent episodes, but go to wagrains.org and click on summaries to find the entire stable of the 136 podcasts produced so far. Sometimes it's the things I think I know best that turn out to be the things I'm most confused about. There's an expression I read recently that highlights this tendency. It goes, just because you're certain doesn't mean you're right. You see, I've always been certain that winter begins in November. Wrong. We may get winter weather in November, but winter itself is determined by a planetary phenomenon that Wolf talks about ahead. Another fallacy of mine is thinking that because we have four seasons, that they're divided evenly every 3 months. But as you'll also hear, it turns out my favorite season clocks in at around 4 months. I last made the trip to the National Weather Service office off Rambo Road, north of Airway Heights, in September 2018, 5 months before the 2019 February from Hell. Come on, you can't have forgotten February. Record snowfalls, record cold, a record blizzard, even a tornado. It was with that weather in mind that I made my July 8, 2019 return visit to the Weather Service office. Although we spend a lot of time talking about February to April weather events, we also discuss this year's tardy El Niño and what it may portend for the future. But before any of that, I asked Wolf a seasonal basic. Like, when does winter start anyway?
Well, the winter months are December through February. That's when we tend to see our most active winter weather. The winter months are classified as those because of the tilt of the Earth's axis at 23.5 degrees. The northern hemisphere, where we live, receives less energy from the sun during those months. So that's when we tend to have our coldest weather.
So it's a function of the tilt of the Earth? It's not a function of months?
Exactly, because the Earth orbits the sun, and during those winter months, because of the tilt of the Earth's axis, most of the energy from the sun is aimed at the southern hemisphere. So that's when they have their summer and when we have our winter during the December through February timeframe.
See, now I thought perhaps that winter would be November through February.
Well, November is still fall. We tend to have a lot of rainy weather. We're often still too warm to get snow. I mean, we do get snow, and we do get snowstorms on occasion in November, but typically it's December, January, and February, those 3 months when we tend to have our coldest weather.
So are the seasons in Spokane broken up into those three-month intervals that we have, you know, 3 months of winter, 3 months of spring, 3 months of summer, 3 months of fall?
Not exactly. Our spring months are often the longest, where we can get spring-like weather in March, April, May, and even June. Sometimes we can have 4 months with that type of weather. And then really the hot summer weather is often most predominant in the July-August time frame. Spring tends to be our longest season here locally.
Interesting. Well, yeah. It's a good season. I like spring. It didn't come early enough this year.
Yeah.
Does our winter weather come from a particular direction?
Tends to come in from the west, sometimes from the north. The jet stream typically runs from west to east in the mid-latitudes where we live.
What are we to expect if it's coming from the west? What would we expect if it's coming from the north? Are those two directions very different or the same?
If it comes from the west, we're seeing storms coming in off the Pacific Ocean, so they tend to have quite a bit of moisture associated with them. So that's what gives us most of our precipitation. When they come down from the north, they tend to be colder and drier, so we tend to... That's when we tend to get our really cold temperatures, but also there's often not as much moisture, so we tend to be dry when it comes down from that direction.
This past winter, of course, it's in the rearview mirror. We're all looking ahead for what we're going to see in the future, but boy, I tell you, I can still remember this past February. Variability seemed to be the word of the winter season. Do you agree?
Well, when I look back at this past winter, I see more of a major swing versus the variability, because the winter was going just as expected through January. We were in an El Nino winter, and we were seeing a lot of mild weather, and everything was going on track until we got into February, where the weather pattern changed significantly.
We're going to talk more about that, but one of the things that occurred in February was that there was a tornado in Kipsat County, and it was the strongest since 1986. Do we ever get tornadoes on the east side of the state?
We do. Most of them are weak, which is classified as an EF0 tornado, which are winds between 65 to 85 miles per hour. Now, the last major outbreak we had around this area was on May 31st of 1997. Six tornadoes statewide occurred, which is the daily record. Four of those six tornadoes occurred around our region, with a F1 tornado in Lincoln and Spokane counties. And there was also an even stronger tornado on that day, an F2, near Athol, Idaho, just east of Silverwood.
Amazing, amazing.
The strongest tornado in state history occurred in my hometown of Vancouver, Washington, on April 5th, 1972, where an F3 tornado killed six people and injured about 300, with 3 to 5 million in damage. And the estimated winds with that was between 158 to 206. That's what the F3 wind speeds are. Also on that day, west of Spokane, there was an F3 tornado with an F2 in Stevens and Lincoln counties. As far as averages, Washington State averages about 2 to 3 tornadoes per year, with our region in central and eastern Washington averaging about 1 per year.
Okay, let's look in our rearview mirror for a moment and talk about the fall. This is the fall of 2018. Now, it was warmer than usual, wasn't it?
The weather pattern over the fall was rather quiet, with normal temperatures and drier than normal conditions. September was very dry, which was essentially an extension of our dry summer, with Wenatchee recording its driest July through September on record, and Spokane its third driest. And then in September and October, we had a few windy events with blowing dust across the Columbia Basin.
The last time I interviewed you, it was September of 2018. And I remember the next day we had this huge windstorm. And I wish that I had had the opportunity to talk to you about it at the time. These windstorms, they always come up in the fall?
It's common for them to come up in the fall. That's when the jet stream is starting to shift further south over our region. We still are warm, so we can still get a lot of mixing in the atmosphere during the fall months. And that's also when our soils are the most dry, because we're coming out of summer when we have our driest months. So when the winds pick up, it can tend to pick up a lot of blowing dust. And that's also often in the fall when there's when the farmers are plowing their fields, so the soils are more conducive for dust being picked.
That's for sure. At a meeting of the Washington Grain Commission in mid-January, the commissioners thought that they were going to get into their fields early. What were we looking at in January in terms of the weather pattern?
It was a mild January with temperatures 2 to 4 degrees above normal. It is worth noting that it was exceptionally warm in Ellensburg on the 27th with a high of 62, which was the second warmest January day on record. We also had several mild days in the Columbia Basin with highs in the low to mid-40s with even a few places in the low 50s. So the weather pattern in January was definitely a very mild one.
And then everything changed. What happened?
The strong ridge of high pressure that was over us, bringing the mild weather, it shifted to the west out over the Pacific Ocean, and that allowed much colder weather to come down from the north and northwest. And when those storms moved in from the northwest, they had some moisture with them, and so that brought quite a bit of snow to the region as well.
Now, weren't there some records set in February? Can you talk about that?
Yes. The snowiest February on record was recorded in Rosalia with 28 inches. La Crosse had 24 inches and Lynd 18 inches. So all three of those places had their snowiest February on record. Pullman broke a record for the number of days of snow in February, where it snowed 17 days during the month. Also worth noting is that we kept the snow on the ground all the way until the middle of March. So there were several snow depth records during the month of March for the first half of the month.
Oh, God. I remember my neighbor who has a snowblower was on vacation during that period, and I had to shovel the walks. Oh, my goodness. So the snow actually turned out to be a godsend for farmers because it got cold during that period, too. Let's talk about the cold.
Yeah, February was exceptionally cold, with several places finishing in second place, third place, fourth place, and fifth place in terms of the coldest February. And in addition to the cold weather in February, March was the coldest on record for the Wenatchee, Airport, Ritzville, Eniat, Odessa, Pullman, and La Crosse. And the coldest March temperature ever recorded was set in Pullman with -9, La Crosse -6, Wilbur -4, Odessa and Grand Coulee both had a temperature of -1, and Wenatchee was 4. So February was exceptionally cold. There weren't a lot of records in terms of the coldest February. It was the cold that just continued on in the March that set a lot of records.
Maybe that was why I was exasperated. It was also windy during this period of time. We had a lot of things going on. There was a blizzard in the basin that killed 1,800 dairy cows. I'm curious, what constitutes a blizzard?
Well, yeah, that blizzard occurred on February 9th. We had blizzard conditions and had a blizzard warning out from the Waterville Plateau south through Moses Lake and Yakima. Blizzard conditions are when we have sustained winds or frequent gusts to 35 miles per hour or greater, with visibility reduced to a quarter of a mile in snow or blowing snow for 3 hours or more. So that's what constitutes a blizzard condition.
So in this period of February, March, do you actually work more here? Because, I mean, you know, there was lots of weather going on. Does that mean that you were doing lots more weather stuff?
It keeps us extra busy because we are issuing advisories and warnings for all the various types of winter weather and the impacts that are associated with them. It means that sometimes we have to bring in a few extra staff to handle the demands. Typically, winter weather, we don't have to have as much extra staffing. It's more of the short-fused severe thunderstorm warnings where we're keeping a close eye on radar. But when it's really active, like it was in February, we do need to have an extra staff around at times.
Many farmers thought that they weren't going to be able to get into their fields after the April rainstorms that occurred, but then the rain just shut off and it was dry and everything that needed to get planted got planted. What happened between that period of time when it was wet April versus dry April?
When we went into April, the first part of April, we had a very unusual situation where we had an atmospheric river of moisture that we call it, where we have moisture from the subtropics aimed at our region. Typically, those happen in the winter months, but we had one in early April that brought heavy rain to the Palouse, with Pullman and Moscow receiving significant flooding. Missouri Flat Creek in Pullman came out of its banks and caused significant flooding in Pullman, and Paradise Creek in Moscow caused significant flooding in that area as well. Then the faucet turned off from mid-April through mid-May with a very dry period. Since then, we've had occasional storms tracking through, bringing showers and thunderstorms. But most of these have been focused over the mountains, and June was pretty dry across most of central and eastern Washington. So that's when the high pressure kicked in. Now, the Cascades, the west slopes of the Cascades did get some precipitation, so which tells me, given how dry we were, that we were in more of a prevailing westerly flow. And the Cascades were absorbing a lot of that precipitation, and then there wasn't much left as it crossed the Cascades into our region because the systems tended to be weaker such that there just wasn't much precipitation left by the time it reached our area.
And what's been controlling that weather at this point? I mean, what are we looking at? Is there a high someplace?
It's been a bit variable the spring. Like I said, it was very wet to start the month of April off, and then high pressure was in control over our region for much of April, the middle of April through the middle of May. And then with the showers and thunderstorms coming through, that high pressure has been shifted a little more west, allowing storms to come in.
Do you have any thoughts on what to expect for the rest of the summer?
Well, lately, high pressure has been in control across the eastern Pacific Ocean. That's continuing to allow low pressure systems to drop in from the north. The climate models caught onto this several months ago, and these models suggest that ridge will continue out in the eastern Pacific, allowing more of these low pressure systems to come in, bringing cooler and showery weather at times from the north. Now the ridge may sneak in from time to time, giving us periods of hot and dry weather this summer. And the official outlooks from the Climate Prediction Center are favoring pretty high odds that we'll have a warmer than normal summer this month.
Okay. All right. So let's discuss El Nino. Now, there is an El Nino, but it was late getting started, right?
The Climate Prediction Center officially declared an El Nino in February. As was mentioned in a prior podcast, there are other factors that influence our weather, such as the Madden-Julian Oscillation. And that was active this year, which may have delayed the official declaration of El Nino.
Now, does the lateness of El Nino mean that it really didn't have an influence on our winter weather?
That's a question that I have been pondering quite a bit, because the weather pattern we were having in December and January was El Niño-like. California and parts of Oregon were wet. So it's likely that those warm waters in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific did occasionally bring impacts typical of El Niño, but the signal wasn't consistent enough for official declaration until February.
Because El Niño was late showing up, does that mean it will stick around through next winter, and will it grow in strength?
Well, officially, the Climate Prediction Center is calling for a 50% to 55% chance of El Niño sticking around through the fall and winter. However, over the past 20 days, from late June and early July, the warm water anomalies have been trending cooler, so exactly what ENSO state will be in next winter carries low confidence.
What happens to El Niño in the summer? We really don't talk about it influencing the summer weather as much as we do the winter weather. Is it there? Does it have an influence?
Well, the El Niño is still there during when we do have an El Niño, common for it to continue through the summer. A lot of the historic El Niño events, El Niño has actually strengthened during the summer. But you're right. Typically, El Niño is more of a factor during our winter months. It doesn't tend to have much of an influence on our summer weather.
The Australians are constantly on guard about El Niño because it usually brings drought to that continent. But Eastern Australia has had a bad drought, and apparently the El Niño wasn't announced until, as you said, February. So is El Niño causing the drought there or something else?
Well, we have to remember that in February, it was their summer, and El Niño typically has brought normal precipitation to Eastern Australia. Typically, their dryness from El Niño kicks in during their winter months, which runs July through September, so now. So there's likely some other factor at play. So far, I haven't seen any documentation about the cause of their dryness of late. You know, we'll have more of an idea about next winter as we get into the fall, when we have better confidence of what El Niño is doing, whether it's still alive or whether it's completely dead. Australia, they have they're classifying the conditions right now as neutral because of the cooling water as of late. So, you know, I would be surprised based off the latest trends that we still have an El Niño next winter. But we'll see how that goes as we head through the summer and into fall.
Neutral is actually pretty good for us ordinarily, isn't it? I mean, in terms of dry land agriculture in eastern Washington.
Yeah, neutral conditions, we tend to see the jet stream dive down into our region as we go into November, and we tend to get some good precipitation, sometimes even in the fall.
Mm-hmm. As important as El Niño's presence or absence is to weather in our region, we shouldn't forget about the PDO, or the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which, like El Niño's, has a positive, neutral, and negative phase, a phenomenon that Wolf talked about in episode 96. Currently, the PDO, which normally has a cycle of 20 to 30 years, but has recently been switching back and forth more frequently, is in a neutral phase. El Niño and the PDO work in tandem to deliver weather to the Pacific Northwest and elsewhere, and I'm sure Wolf and I will be talking more about both in the future. Until then, I hope you enjoyed episode 137, or what I entitled, The February from Hell and the March and April from Heck. Please join me again next week for another episode of Weed All About It.
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun, and we have our say. But Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.